Welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. I am Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, here with my colleague from the Detroit Free Press, Chris Solari. It is Thursday, August 24th, 8 days before Michigan State's opener against Central Michigan that we are recording this. We also have some new audio equipment, so hopefully our dulcet tones are coming through a little more pleasing to your ears.
You sound like a warm, buttery cinnamon roll.
Yeah, I feel like I want to do something on NPR right now. That's what I do feel that way.
Yeah, hopefully this clears up some of the issues that listeners had with some of the audio issues that we've had over the last few years.
Primarily my fault. I've spilled way too many crumbs on my computer, and it's affected the natural audio.
You also spilled too many crumbs on my computer and affected the audio.
That's fair enough. Yes. All right, so we're going to have a conversation about MSU football heading into leaving fall camp, heading into game week in the season. We'll do another one of these previewing the Central Michigan game next week. But let's start, Chris, with the position that everybody is maybe most intrigued by.
Long snapper.
Obviously, is long snapper.
Yes, Hank Pepper.
And important, look, last year they found, I think what Tucker said at Media Days a month ago now, he said, you don't realize how important that is till you don't have one. But the quarterback position, Caten Hauser or Noah Kim, Sam Levitt, the heralded freshman is also included in that, but it would be a stunner if it's not Kim or Hauser. And, Mel Tucker has not tipped his hand on this. You hear various reports out of scrimmages about who was better where. What I still, my gut still tells me that Noah Kim will be under center for that first snap against Central Michigan, and they'll go from there, and that there's a plan for the other guy, for Caten Hauser, to see meaningful time. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the blueprint is what you saw last year early on at Michigan, where Cade McNamara came back as the incumbent starter, but it was pretty clear that J.J. McCarthy was the future at that position for the team. And I believe they swapped starts, if I'm not mistaken, in the first couple games before McCarthy landed the starting job. I could see a similar situation here playing out, but I also think that, listen, anytime a coach takes over a program, they want to install their people in the most important positions. And with Peyton Thorne departing in the spring, that allows Mel Tucker and his staff to start thinking about moving towards Caten Hauser, which I think everybody inside that program at some point realizes that they need to see what that kid is as a four-star recruit, particularly because other four-star recruits coming after want to see how quickly you're going to get a guy on the field. So it's a fascinating dynamic that plays out more than just, even though they want to say it's going to play out on the field, there are other things I think at play beyond simply just who's the best guy right now for this team, because it very well could be Kim and it very well could be Hauser. But I think at some point you also have to get a guy that you've brought in and basically sold your program's vision on to a chance to run that program.
So what's interesting about the Hauser-Levitt dynamic, and you're talking redshirt freshman to me, is it creates something where, like, Mel Tucker said something about the idea that, when he was at Georgia, they recruited the number one quarterback in the nation 3 straight years. That's just what you do. And, Justin Fields transfers and, that's just what is. What's interesting about having Levitt is I think it takes the pressure off of what becomes of Hauser. Like, in other words, if this year, say Noah Kim starts at Central Michigan, looks pretty good, and they give Hauser some reps, but Kim's the better guy this year, even if Hauser's got a higher, it's like, and you're going to play the better guy because all the players on the team see who the better guy is and whatever. And you're worried about what that means for Hauser long term and all that. You have another guy you're really high on who's just as heralded, a class behind him. And if you're recruiting these guys year after year, you're going to lose some of them. And so I think that does take a little pressure off This isn't like, this is the one veteran, this is the one heralded guy they've really had, and you know, how does this break down? I think the other interesting dynamic of this is that it's just how much, and you and I have talked about this, how much eligibility that Noah Kim still has left. So, I mean, and that's the thing that was weird. It's been weird about all of this. It was weird with Peyton Thorne, who technically had 2 years left. It was weird about Kim has 3 years left, technically, right? So, like, that is the extra COVID year with that group still, and Caten Hauser and Sam Levitt don't have it. That's created just the thing where, like, Noah Kim, if he was actually became a really proficient star quarterback, you know, you're not running out of time with him. It's not like he can't also be looked at like a young quarterback in that way. And given his size, he's probably not an NFL guy in a lot of ways. So you could have a really good college quarterback for 3 years. So I don't think you want to run from that either.
Yeah, and I think that the size factor is something to keep in mind. I mean, I went back and looked through the starters last year, and at 185 pounds, Noah Kim would have been the lightest quarterback in the Big Ten a year ago by about 10 pounds. And that's a factor once you get into Power 5 play. It might not be a factor against the Central Michigans and Richmonds of the world, but it absolutely is when you start to see some of the bigger hits. And really, even last year, that Western Michigan game ultimately really is what became the initial undoing of Peyton Thorne when he went out on the read option run and took a late shot right in the ribs. He was able to bounce up and bounce back from that. Then he gets hit again against Akron. I don't know if Noah Kim, because we haven't seen it, I don't know if Noah Kim could survive some of those big hits that Thorne took, because Thorne had about 20, 30 pounds on him. And I think Hauser does as well. It was evident to Jerry DiNardo and the Big Ten Network crew when they were in practice, the size factor is maybe the one separator between the two quarterbacks right now. I asked Malik Carr earlier this week, I said, you know, what does each do to impress you? He said Caten has been more accurate lately, and Noah has been more like the calm, cool, and collected. So that's, you know, again, those two different things there, you know, to kind of unpack. One, who's the best playmaker? I mean, you know, that sounds like, by all accounts, Caten Hauser is more of a gunslinger, and he's admitted it as well, which means he's willing and open to taking chances, which for a young quarterback oftentimes means turnovers. And when you hear the words calm, cool, and collected, to me, that means how do you respond from making mistakes and staying the course, which is where Kim is and which you expect from a guy who's been in the program now for his fourth year. So it's going to be fascinating. I think it's a different dynamic than in 2021 when Peyton Thorne got the job over Anthony Russo, simply because I think there's just way more unknown between these two guys than there were those two guys. I mean, you had a start at Penn State on the road in a Big Ten environment for Thorne to build on.
You had a lot of film on Russo.
Right? And lot of film on Russo, and a lot of, I think, 26 or 27 starts at that point at Temple. So he had played mid-major and Power 5 teams out in the AAC. So, yeah, this is a totally different dynamic, I think, than the 2021 battle. And I do think, I mean, when Jay Johnson says that it's possible they could go with two quarterbacks, I'm not necessarily sure I buy that. But what I do think is kind of what we were saying. I think these guys are going to have the first two games to get their feet wet and see and show who can move the offense, who can move the chains, more importantly, and keep the offense on the field, because that was the biggest issue last year beyond anything else.
We've talked about the idea that at quarterback, it all plays out in the field. Like quarterback, that's a position that sort of decides itself. And that's the advantage of playing it out during games, is you see who's smoothest, you see who's the playmaker, you see who deals with adversity, you see who's most accurate. And I got to imagine in the first 2 weeks, they have a plan for both. I think just out of, if you have a plan for both, it would make sense to have Noah Kim under center first. He's the guy who's been around. I think it's easier to also replace the older guy with the younger guy, whereas if the younger guy were to struggle.
But the other side of that, though, is there any loyalty that Mel Tucker and his staff have to guys that remain from Mark D'Antonio's recruiting classes?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always think, and I've heard coaches say this before, and I think this is important as a coach, that when you come to a school, you've chosen those players, and those are your players as much as the ones you recruit. Now, not every coaching staff feels that way or behaves that way, but ultimately, if you're Mel Tucker and the staff, you want to win this year as many games as you can. The other thing is, I come back to this with the idea of the open competition and Peyton Thorne and the idea that, you know, young players who have been told they'll get an opportunity want to see it play out, and you have to give guys a chance to compete. I mean, it's only fair just because a guy gets there first, even if he's still the stronger guy, doesn't mean you don't have a younger guy with a higher ceiling. And why does timing become everything, right? Just because he's got experience and all those things. I think also, you know, players know who the best player is, and if you don't play who the best player is, that's a problem. Now, if there's no separation, and you and I, in our time covering Michigan State, have we ever seen a time where there wasn't eventual clear separation? I don't think we have, but sometimes it takes a minute. It took a minute in 2013. It took a little bit of time, you know, before I was covering the team, but back with Cousins
and Nickel.
Yeah, and Nickel. And so it can take a little bit of a minute, but there's always been eventual fairly clear separation. And so that I think we will, you'll sort of know it when you see it.
Well, from a coaching standpoint, and this, again, when we talk about all the mitigating factors that go beyond just the performance on the field, just beyond the X's and O's, that extra COVID year is something that's an issue because Peyton Thorne still had a couple years left and Noah Kim has that many years left. Are you going to be able to, as a coaching staff, recruit at that position every year, knowing that those high 4- and 5-star kids are looking and saying, well, you got a guy who's been starting for you all year that's now coming back with two more years after this year? I don't know. Yep. I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic that kind of muddies the decision-making process based on the history, if that makes any sense.
I do think that if Peyton Thorne had 1 year left only,
yes,
maximum that he could do, it might have been a really interesting different place because easier to sell to other guys that, you know, if you're Caden Hauser, like Connor Cook, you could have 3 years as the guy. And the other thing that would have happened is you would have known a year from now that and that Hauser and Levitt then as a redshirt freshman, could compete, and one of those guys was going to be your guy instead of one being a true freshman. And that's what, like, the idea that they didn't want Thorne back, I've always thought is, I mean, I understand they wanted to give other guys looks, but it's just not the case, because ultimately, with a guy like Sam Levitt, it's not ideal. I know he wanted to compete from day one, but it's not ideal if one of these other guys takes it and runs with it, and then you're finally ready to compete with it, and somebody else is really entrenched too. And I also know that may open the competition up next year, and it may be a continuous deal. But I do think if there had been 1 year left, it would have been for Peyton Thorne maximum. It might have been a different dynamic for them to think about, and I don't know if they would have played it differently.
Yeah, and it may have been handled differently from the outset with how the competition was opened.
All right, let's look at some other positions. Let's go around the offense a little bit. Running back. The name that you hear the most about that always pops is Nate Carter. Now, he played very little last year at UConn before he got hurt, was productive before he did. We haven't actually seen him at Michigan State. And
we saw him in the spring a little bit.
That's true.
We did get to see him a little bit in the spring.
But the running backs don't do it. There's not a ton they did there. So I guess he is one of the guys I'm most intrigued about seeing, just because they haven't, I don't want to say they've overhyped it because we don't know what he is, but they haven't been careful with their praise of him. You know what I mean? They're not cautious about that. They seem to think he's going to be a really good player. And so I'm very curious to see. And you don't hear like Jalen Berger's name brought up as much. And you sort of know what Berger is as a baseline. I don't know what his ceiling is and everything, but Carter, you hear more, and that's interesting given that he's a new guy and you already have a guy like Berger entrenched.
It is fascinating because I think there are, and I don't want to say comparisons to Kenneth Walker, because that's going to be taken like, well, Nathan Carter runs the ball like Kenneth Walker and he does the things that Kenneth Walker does. What I'm trying to say is the praise and the things that we've seen and heard throughout the summer and since the spring, I think are similar to some of the things that we heard. Remember after that Northwestern game that Xavier Henderson came in and apologized to us for not telling us a little bit more and letting the cat out of the bag about how good Kenneth Walker was. But I've heard guys this year using the term home run hitter with Nathan Carter. And that's a term that we heard right away about Kenneth Walker. And again, you're talking about a whole different set of circumstances there when you had a bunch of sixth-year offensive linemen, fifth-year offensive linemen, guys who had double-digit starts with over 7-8 guys that had already been in the program on the offensive line in front of them. So Walker walked into a pretty good offensive line from a depth standpoint and from an experience standpoint, even though they had struggled previously. So I think that vision is something you've heard so much about. I think that's the thing that if Carter can show better vision than Berger, and I'm not making any Walker comparisons here at all, if you can show better vision than Berger showed last year in terms of decisiveness at hitting the hole, speed and getting there, and the ability to power through it, I think he's the guy. And I'm not really sure where Jaron Mangum fits in this. You know, he's a fifth-year guy. He's a different kind of runner. He's a power back. I know he had been out of practice at times during camp. But again, veteran, I've said this before, veteran guys don't sometimes need to have those preseason camps 5-6 years in a row, right? So Mangum, I think, gives you a different type of look. I think those three guys, though, can give them some depth. And whatever happens with Jalen Barberin this season will be another fascinating thing, because I think he's got elite speed that if he can work his way into that group, who knows what his future is. I mean, I think he's got a bright future, but I think they've got some guys in front of him right now.
All right, let's look at receiver. And obviously this was Keon Coleman was supposed to be the headliner, the go-to guy. And, you know, they don't have that anymore. And the guy who's been around, the most experienced, the guy who's going to be on the field all the time is a guy like Trey Mosley. We know that. We don't really know what his ceiling is as like a headliner. Is he one of those guys, or is he a steady number two if you've got a good, you know, a good operation? I tend to think the high ceiling guys are the sort of redshirt freshman class, the highest ceiling guys. Not that there aren't some good, I think Montori Foster can be a good player. I think there are other good players. But if they're going to have, and maybe you have, and if you have three guys who are veterans who are all really good at their craft, all just good, you might be absolutely fine at that position. But it does help to have a game breaker. And I wonder if that guy exists, if it's not one of the younger players.
Yeah. Gates, obviously Antonio Gates Jr. is one guy that you think about right away. Is a guy who runs precise routes and can get separation. I'm not sold that Montori Foster can't be as good as Keon Coleman, if not better. Remember 2 years ago when they went and Jalen Naylor got hurt, it wasn't Keon Coleman that moved into that starting role. It was Montori Foster. And this is a guy who's got a similar athletic pedigree in terms of a basketball player with Division I offers who was hurt with a foot injury last year. And, you know, that, you know, by all accounts, he is a hard worker and a guy who I think, like Nate Carter, is a guy that in the weight room you've seen some things where you say, this guy's got it, you know, what it takes to be a high impact football player. So I think, you know, assuming he can generate the speed with that foot, I think that's a big thing. I, you know, the guy who I think is he kind of gets a little bit lost in the shuffle is Christian Fitzpatrick. They don't have a 6'4 guy like that. I mean, Foster isn't quite as big as Coleman, and Fitzpatrick is about that size, but doesn't necessarily have the same athletic ability. So I think, you know, they've got some depth there, bringing in Alante Brown. You know, maybe he's a guy that in the slot can give you some game-breaking plays. Maybe Henry or Glover can be the guy. And I think the two freshmen, I mean, I think Jalen Smith in particular has got a bigger body that might be a little ready for it as well. But I know that the Isaiah Johnson kid also has got some quicks to him as well. But listen, it's going to come down to chemistry. You know, I think that's going to be a fascinating watch as well, because with Kim and Hauser working with the second and third units last year, I mean, they got reps with these guys. So who's going to have the best chemistry in moving the ball down the field with what they already built last year?
That's the thing. The quarterback could matter. We've seen that play out before, where whoever that gets the job has a different vibe with different receivers.
You're talking about 2012? All the same receivers who won a Big Ten title and a Rose Bowl that next year with a different quarterback?
It was but look, we saw it too with Jaden Reed. I mean, and obviously that he was their best receiver, so that made sense. There was a connection there, and you could see it. There are times where that makes a difference. Let's talk a little tight end. One of my favorite people to listen to, favorite coaches, is Ted Gilmer, because I think he is like, I could have a beer with Ted.
Yeah,
and he just sounds like he's got a little Lovie Smith to his draw. I don't know. He just really mature dude, fun to listen to. And when he talks about Malik Carr, he basically said, how their relationship has grown, and you wrote about this, and, you know, I don't need a 22-year-old friend.
It's such a great quote. Guy.
And but he was very clear that Malik Carr is the guy. Like, there was no...
No, he's the starter. I mean,
yeah,
that's literally the only spot where we can say, oh, okay, he's going to be the starter.
Right. There are a bunch of guys, a year ago, it's a bunch of guys in the mix or whatever, Daniel Barker and all this. No, this is him, and it sounds like he's taken a step in sort of embracing everything that goes with being a tight end. We'll see if that plays out. He's obviously got, when you're looking for difference makers, and Mel Tucker has talked about the idea you got to have three or four of them on both sides of the ball to get where you want to go, he has the frame, he's the prototype of a guy who should be a difference maker for you. And I think MSU could really, really use that out of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, particularly when you lose a guy two guys like Coleman and Reed, you need to get that downfield production somewhere, and I think Carr's got the ability to do that. We've seen him get separation and run away from linebackers that try to cover him and overpower some of the slot guys who try and get in there with him. I don't know if they have another guy like that, and I don't know if many programs have a guy like that. But we've also had 3 years of hearing that Malik Carr is coming. Malik Carr is the next guy. So he's got to show that too. And I think his attitude, I think, is pretty interesting. You know, I remember he came here and thought that he would be 1 year and then heading to the pros. You got to have that kind of self-confidence, but you also have to put in the grind, as coaches might say. And that's something that Ted Gilmore said. You know, he wasn't there. He wasn't blocking. He wasn't doing all the things you need to do to be a tight end. And now if he's really up to 6'7" and 272 pounds or whatever, that's a big, big dude. And these quarterbacks are going to need that kind of presence from the tight end, because you've heard it thousands of times in the history of football, the tight end is a new quarterback's best friend and should be. The guys behind him, I'm curious to see how that goes, because, you know, when you hear that none of those guys behind him have all of that, I'm not saying that's a concern, because, you know, that's you really what Carr presents is kind of rare. You know, it's very much in similar fashion to Coleman, you know, in terms of the athletic ability. But, you know, a guy like Evan Morris and Falea and Jack Nickel, if they're better in the blocking game, Hopper and Franklin come in as guys. I think Hopper right now and Morris sound like they are the next two guys, with Nickel and Falea right there as potential. And when you hear a coach say a guy needs to catch the ball more consistently at the tight end position, like Gilmore said about Jalen Franklin, who a guy he worked with at Wisconsin, that kind of sets off alarm bells when you hear it, because if you're not catching the ball, that's a quick way to ruin a quarterback's confidence.
You know, they talk about depth a lot of places, and at quarterback, because there's, as far as we know, there's no great clear separation yet, right? There's no real concern about injury because the next guy can't be that. It can't be that much worse.
Yeah,
and that might. But at tight end, a position that you can get nicked up, and the Malik Carr has had some injury issues. I do think his availability could really impact this offense in this season, and that I'm curious to see how, you know, they need to keep him healthy and playing well. And
I remember last year seeing him in the red jersey during preseason camp, and it took him a while to kind of catch up. So, I mean, you know, we saw on the Big Ten Network him in a red jersey, but then he was out there in highlights in the scrimmage. You know, I try not to read too much into the red jerseys during camp because guys are sometimes being protected. But there are important guys that you see that if they enter a season nicked up like Jaden Reed did last year, and then you're not at 100% physically and you start taking those hits and you find yourself out by week three. I mean, that's something that they cannot have happen to Malik Carr this year.
All right, let's go to the offensive line.
Speaking of red jerseys.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they at least they have a little more depth to withstand, you know, injuries but they need this group to take a step this year, and they need. I mean, the problem is, and I've said this before with the offensive line stuff. If every year injuries are crippling your offensive line, then it's also a recruiting issue because you're just not recruiting enough good players to be the guy behind them, right? It can't be your every year storyline. You can have a year once every 3 years where it's like, the offensive line got injured again. But if the offensive line's injured every year, that's just what happens in football. You need to have more guys. I'm curious to see the depth of talent, you know, and whether they can get a group that can actually move somebody.
Depth in theory versus depth in actuality is something that you don't see until the bullets are live. I mean, you can tell me that the redshirt freshmen and sophomores are ready to become key contributors, but until I'm seeing that on game days, they're going against your own team and what they know. It's the guys that they don't know and how they handle that. I think there were times last year with Baldwin and Brown in particular where, I mean, both of them at times looked like turnstiles, and you can't have that at the tackle spot. But there's also year-by-year growth. And I think those were important, important snaps that they played. I mean, Brown in his first year as a starter got every game. I think he started the Pitt game at the end of the 2021 season. And Baldwin started the first game against Western for Jarrett Horst and then took over when Horst went AWOL at the end of the season like he did 2 years ago. So Baldwin's a guy who's transitioning from basketball to football in some ways, even though he played football a lot. I mean, he's I think a little bit raw. I think that, but I mean, the talk is among Chris Kapilovich and the coaches that guys like Ethan Boyd and Keyshawn Blackstock are pushing those two guys in particular at tackle. So that tells me that there's a little more depth, right? But the question is what's happening with Nick Samak? I mean, ultimately that's going to be the interior is right now a question. You know, Samak admitted he had an upper body injury that has kept him out for a good chunk of preseason camp, but he's also a fifth year guy who's been through all these camps. So is he going to be ready for game day is really the only thing that you wonder about. And, you know, what happens then if he isn't? Well, do you shuffle the interior because both Gino Vandermark and J.D. Duplain have been handling snaps during camp at times? The primary guy has been Dallas Fincher. So do you plug and play with Fincher? Does that make you the best offensive line? Or does moving one of those other guys over and bringing in one of the younger tackles like Christian Phillips or Kevin Wigginton, is that something that makes you better? Because both of those guys have been talked about, and Phillips and Wigginton is guys on the interior who can move people. And, you know, I Phillips, Big Dooley, is a guy who's a massive human. So that's a bigger size guard than really anybody you got. So I think it's fascinating to see. I want to see if they're going to be able to, in the first half, roll out the second offensive unit, the second offensive line, and how those guys handle Central Michigan, in week one if they can do that. Because if they're not comfortable in putting out a full unit and they just keep putting guy here, guy there, I think the depth might be a little more mirage and hope for later in the season than it is at the outset.
Okay, speaking of places with depth, what may be the strength of the team, and one of the things that Tucker is, you know, leading, getting the horses to the race is something Tucker is concerned about, and having his best guys, and could be the offensive line, the defensive line too, getting the Simeon Barrows there healthy, getting, you know, that group there, because again, you talk about depth, but Simeon Barrows is a pro, and you can have good players behind him, but you don't have, you know, a three technique the same as him on your roster, and so like. To me, they do have increased depth. I think you'll see a better rotation. Guys not playing as many snaps, but that group and I think, you know, when you talk about a position group where they may have a chance to help separate themselves, and not just help separate themselves, but also be good enough that a young secondary has some advantages because the group in front of them is so good. You've got experienced linebackers. You know, I think that how good this defensive line actually is really paramount to the season.
Yeah, those interior guys, I mean, there are four guys who are potential pros. Barrow, Sammy, Derek Harmon, and Maverick Hansen. And, you know, the three guys that were here last year at times were all banged up with Barrow, Hartman, and Hansen. They played through them. Barrow, I think, sat out a couple games. Jacob Slade was in and out, but he's off to the pros now as well. But that's, I think, the one place where, you know, even it was a little surprising that they brought in Jalen Sammy, quite honestly, because I thought with Alex Van Summeren taking that next step, he was able to preserve his red shirt last year. But again, another guy that you've seen in a red jersey on the BTN special that, you know, doesn't necessarily seem like he's ready. And I don't feel like we've seen anything from the two other transfers, Jarrett Jackson and Dre Butler, all the way back to the spring when they were on the sidelines out of uniform. So, I think those four guys with Barrow, Sammy, Harmon, and Hansen are really as good of a quartet as you're going to see in the Big Ten. And then if you can throw in Adelaide on rush packages in the middle, that gives you another dynamic that you don't necessarily have with anybody else. But he's also, you know, you talk about what Malik Carr is at the tight end spot. I think Adelaide is at the defensive end spot as well, in that he can be a bigger guy, but he can also be on the edge and increase your pass rush.
Yeah, he's an interesting player, and I'm curious to see you know, how he's used, and I'm curious to see the entire, like, you know, by Jove, how quickly is a guy like that a part of things? You know, is there a package where he's ready now? You know, rush end is not, I don't want to belittle the position is in terms of deep thoughts, but it is a position you can play early without. It's the opposite of tight end, which is weird because it's the opposite position in some ways. But like tight end next to quarterback is, some will say, is the most complex, maybe center. But you've got to know the concepts in the run and pass. You've got to be able to do a lot of stuff. You've got to really understand things. Defensive end, if you've got a young guy who can beat somebody to the edge, you can put him out there and certainly in passing situations and get something out of him. And I'm curious to see, you know, do they have guys among this group on the edge? Do they have what coaches will say is an edge guy? I mean, I think Chris Bogle is, you know, hurt last year. We saw some flashes from him when he was healthy. What is his ceiling? I don't really have a great feel for that at the Big Ten level.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the SEC is that, you know, it doesn't really show as a proving ground.
Well, no, what I mean, though, is like before he got hurt, he was good against like mid-majors is what I mean. You know,
that's
like,
fair.
You haven't seen. And you know, it's sort of like, you know, we saw this with Jacoby Winmon, like when he was still playing defensive end, he looked really good against the mid-majors. And then they, you know, when you went up a level, it was like, oh, this guy should be a linebacker. You know, you got a position here.
Yeah.
So I want to see Bogle against high majors.
No, I agree with you, but I do think that, you know, the difference in size between Bogle and Winmon is a little bit in terms of length and arm reach,
yes,
which you need.
Yes.
You know, I think Bogle and Adelaide right now, to me, are the guys that you put out there and start. But I wouldn't be shocked to see a guy like Zion Young, who was suspended for the final four games. But when they had all those injuries before that with Bogle and Petrowski and everybody else, Zion Young was really making some headway as a freshman last year. So he's got some size and reach advantage to him as well that I think will put him right in the mix potentially to start. But you mentioned about the young, and you mentioned about the young guys. And I think there's two things that you want to have: a complete defensive end that can do both, but you can put a young guy out there and do one of two things: see ball, get ball, or see quarterback, get quarterback. And, you know, I think from the accounts that I'm hearing, Andrew DePape is the guy that's see ball, get ball, and has that ability in the run game, where Job has that freakish athletic ability to overpower a defender off the snap and the quickness to get around a tackle and get inside and cause disruption in the backfield for quarterbacks. So I'm fascinated with those two guys. I'm curious about Ken Talley and Jalen Thompson, two guys that we haven't heard a lot about. I know Talley was a guy that we saw in a red jersey, and Thompson didn't arrive until the summer. So I think the other two freshmen might be a little farther ahead from that respect. And Talley had a full year in the program as well as a four-star guy. And, you know, then what do you have veteran guys who've had experience in Brandon Wright and Avery Dunn. You know, they're deeper at edge rusher, and they can withstand one or two injuries, I think, at this point. The experience level drops off from there. And again, with Adelaide, I mean, you hear that he is just a freakish athlete on the edge at getting to the quarterback and being that guy, the edge guy that you're talking about. But we don't have a lot of game film, even at Texas A&M, to really say that. How's he going to be when that Washington team comes in, when they go to Iowa, when they face those bigger tackles, cornerstone tackles that you see around the Big Ten? I think that's, you know, this is I think the biggest high ceiling group, but also I don't know what to expect yet in terms of how quickly they can reach that ceiling.
Linebacker is probably the most settled starting spot with Cal Halliday and Winmon. Just two kind of proven guys who give you different things. You sort of know that what Aaron Brulé is. He's a good player, but he's probably not going to knock one of those guys out of it. You get a young player like Jordan Hall, who they really love, who arrived early, who's got, I mean, I think whose role will only increase quickly as his career goes on. So it'll be interesting to watch his role this season and how much he's brought in. You know, he's going to play. He's going to play a lot. And I think he's in a really good spot, frankly, where he's not, you know, he does have a guy like Halliday in front of him, you know, and that's, it's not a bad place to be as a true freshman, even if you're a really savvy kid. And so I think this could be a position of like solid strength in some ways. I don't think it's a position where they separate themselves from other teams, so to speak, but they're fine here. And if they have a good defensive line, they're going to have good linebackers. I think this is a position where they're good. And it'll be interesting to see Winmon with a full year at a natural position.
And I think the other part of that is that, unlike the defensive line, you don't need 6-8 guys because, one, you're running that 4-2-5 most of the time, although I think they had success with a 4-3 last year. Late in the year at slowing down the run despite their personnel limitations those final four games. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that continues or if they keep force feeding that 4-2-5 with the two linebackers. You know, I think Brulé showed some things when Winmon was out that were very Winmon-like. And he's an experienced guy who also came from the SEC like Chris Bogle did. So, you know, that I think Hall, though, you can tell just his demeanor, his words, and the praise that he's got, he's going to be a special kind of leader that, you know, you've seen those linebackers come around even back in my day, like Reggie Garnett and Ike Reese and all those guys that came before and after them. I think Hall is that kind of cornerstone guy in the program and really in the middle of the defense. I'm fascinated to see what Aaron Alexander does, the Massachusetts transfer, because, listen, there we don't know what the status of Darius Snow is. We don't know. Maanaoteaute hadn't been in practice either at times during camp. So those two guys were your most experienced guys, and their depth was down to the point where Harold Joyner moved for his third position from running back to tight end or running back to safety, and now he's at linebacker, which, you know, he's obviously got the athletic ability to contribute on special teams. I don't know how quickly a mid-camp move to linebacker can get you on the field on defense, but it's clear they need some depth there, and I think that's where Alexander, they're going to need him to come along quickly as well. But yeah, but I think those two, I mean, Halliday and Winman are the guys, and you know, that's going to be, I think they need those two guys without Xavier Henderson there to be the vocal leaders in the middle. Halliday's probably not necessarily, he's more of a lead by play, and Winman is a guy who I think can, you know, we saw that early in the year last year before his suspension after that tunnel fight that Winman has a voice that his teammates listen to.
The defensive backfield, you know, Chuck Brantley deciding to stay, I think was helpful, because it is there, and there are some, you know, there's some guys with some experience, the Angelo Grosses, you know, and some young guys who got some experience last year. But it also could be with it's safety with like Jaden Magum and Malik Spencer, and we'll see where Magum plays and. You know, with Tatum and you know where how they use him, like it could be a fairly inexperienced defensive backfield, but I also think it could be a defensive backfield with guys who have a decently high ceiling, some of those players, and so it'll be interesting to watch how they handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked with Mel Tucker after the first scrimmage and before the second scrimmage, and there was audible and visible frustration, particularly when he talked about getting the horses to the race and staying healthy. You watch back that BTN special, there were five defensive backs in red jerseys. That's a cautionary sign right there. Again, like I said earlier, you don't necessarily try to read too much into that, because guys can be in and out with whatever. It could be a twisted ankle one day. It could be, you know, a banged up wrist that needs taped up, something like that. Those things happen. It's football. But, you know, some of those guys are, I mean, Brantley's a guy that's got experience. They need him on the field. Gross, I thought last year, when he was at safety, Mangum, by the way, Mangum was another guy that we saw in the red jersey on the BTN special. And has been out of practice at times. So to me, that's, I think, where Angelo Gross might be a pivotal guy. He moved into the nickel late in the season because early in the year, you could tell, I think there was a play at the Washington game that he just got burnt and was trying to chase and did not have the giddy up. And you could tell that he was banged up last year. I think he becomes pivotal right now because you can move a guy like Chester Kimbrough into the nickel, and he's got experience there. And if you need to move a guy back to safety, if Mangum is out at the outset of the year, Gross is a guy who's got a full season plus of starting experience there. And really, they might even need him to be a vocal voice there. I like what I've seen early from Malik Spencer. I think he is going to be a dynamic force to watch in the coming years and really an interesting dude to talk to. And I think he's a hard hitter. He kind of reminds me of some of those downhill safeties that Mark D'Antonio had in some ways. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, what do you do? I mean, you know, you're really young. I mean, a guy like Caleb Coley could make an impact at corner. Marquis Lowry has been hurt a lot, but is a guy that has the length and size that Mel Tucker likes at cornerback. They brought in the two transfers, Terry Roberts from Iowa and Samar Melvin from Wisconsin. So those are guys that, you know, should be pushing for starting jobs. You know, perhaps Roberts ends up overtaking one of those two guys, or maybe they feel that Tatum moving back to safety is something that would make them better. I don't know. I think there's so many question marks, and you know, this is to me, you know, I kind of mentioned that earlier about the defensive end spot. This is the low floor to high ceiling. If that group is bad, if that group struggles, if that group has communication issues like it did last year, this could be a long season. If that group elevates its play year over year from the experience that some of those guys got last year, they've got a chance to slow things down, particularly if the defensive line can get home.
The kicking game, it is a position that I don't want to say it's been ignored in terms of conversation, because as we've gotten closer and closer to football season, I get asked more and more about it, right? People are a little concerned just because you lose your kicker, you lose a great punter, obviously. And for a team that has might have a pretty slim margin of error, the kicking game could be the difference between 4 and 7 wins, just in how you execute there. Punting and getting points and field goals and everything. So
cost them the Indiana game.
Yeah. So I think this is, you know, and people say, well, what's going on in practice? My thought on kickers especially is that is an in-game evaluation thing. Like, the pressure is so different. I used to, by the way, if you didn't know this, I covered Western Michigan, lived in Kalamazoo.
I thought you were going to tell me you were a kicker, and I would have been like, man,
no,
how'd you hide this from us? No, back to the Western Michigan, do a shot.
Yeah, no, I once kicked a 35-yard field goal there. But I remember one specific guy they had, Fort Lauderdale kid, you know, great leg, just did not, you know, I mean, was great in practice, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just in games, didn't have the mental fortitude for the position, and that can happen. So and you have a guy in Jonathan Kim, who, you know, is known for having a big leg, but will he be an accurate kicker? Because ultimately, while it's great to be able to capitalize when you're within 50 yards, you need 3 points when you're within 40 yards.
You want the stat of the year going into this season, particularly on the special team side. Michigan State has kickers with a combined 2 field goal attempts and punters with a combined 2 punts in their career, one apiece for each of them. And neither of the kickers have made a collegiate field goal. So it should be a warning sign. And, you know, I think that we've seen 15 minutes of practice a couple times during camp, and conspicuously absent is any semblance of the kicking game. And a lot of times, most years, that's usually all we'll see. Yeah. I mean, particularly under Mark D'Antonio, a lot of times we would see some special teams periods and nothing on offense, nothing on defense. We've seen drill work, but we haven't seen the kickers out there doing their thing. So Mel Tucker says he expects it to be a more productive, a productive position at punter. It's going to be hard to get, you know, replace an All-American regardless at any point. But Bryce Berenger was such a weapon. And really, boy, I mean, you think about how many times Bryce Berenger saved them. I mean, how many games did he maybe win for them last year by flipping the field?
No, it's going to be an interesting deal. And, you know, I just think it could be, I mean, look, quarterback's the most important position in a lot of ways. I still think that 2016 team, if they had adequate quarterback play, might have won 6 games instead of going 3-9 for everything else that went wrong. Like, quarterback play is the most impactful. But on a team like this MSU team that might be in a lot of close games, that you cannot leave points on the board. You cannot afford to have disadvantages in field position. It'll be interesting to see what they do at punt returner and kick returner in terms of, you know, whether somebody emerges there and gives them a real Jaden Reed type threat. That was a luxury they had after years of not really having much there. So, you know, and that can obviously play a factor too. If you can have somebody who can, you know, bust one or two in the course of a year and have a few possessions where you're starting at the 50 because you flipped a field in that sense. I mean, those are things that we'll see if anybody really has the knack for that.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrell Henry got some experience last year on kick returns, so he could be a guy in both of those spots. I think Alante Brown is a guy that they brought in who's got a chance to do that. I think in the kick side, I mean, Montori Foster has done that historically as well on the kick returns. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you've got so many. And maybe that's a spot where you get a freshman like Jalen Barber involved. A guy that's got elite speed, and if he's running back vision, if you're able to create a role for him on one of those and he can break him, he's got game-breaking speed. Does he have the vision and instincts at this point to kind of do that? And ball security.
And sure hands, I was going to say.
Ball security.
That's the other
thing. I mean,
that's
if
first
you,
most important thing.
Yeah, it is the single most important thing. I mean, if you aren't judging the punts, you can't be out there.
We will come back and do another one of these next week, and we'll get more into the matchup with Central Michigan and how we think that's going to play out. It'll also be after Mel Tucker's Monday press conference, so if there is an update on the quarterback position, I don't think we'll get one. We'll have the latest, in other words, on any news that's sort of coming out of things. My guess, Chris, is that we're going to go into Friday night the way we went into Friday night 2 years ago at Northwestern, not 100% sure who's taking the field at quarterback. You agree?
I completely agree, and I think it's going to also be who's going to have the second and third series too. I think it's going to be a little bit of a revolving door at times to see where those guys are, and I anticipate that, but you know, I didn't know what to expect either at Northwestern, and basically one guy took all the snaps that year.
Yep, and that's right. Somebody could take it and run with it, and it becomes clear and obvious, and that sometimes happens. And if you've covered Michigan State, and if you're of any age or you followed them for any years, you know you're very aware that the more heralded guy doesn't always win the job, and at Michigan State almost never wins the job, which is weird, which makes me believe like the most heralded guy is due. At some point, the four-star kid is going to win the job because it just hasn't happened. We will be back, as I said, next week. Probably do that, middle of the week Tuesday, Wednesday sort of deal. We appreciate you listening. This has been a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. Please rate, subscribe, throw fruit, however you feel. Thanks for listening.